Council. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January 24th. It is 9:02 a.m., and we are going to convene our general discussion in the conference room. And first up on our agenda today is a discussion regarding public hearing. So I assume, Councilor Hicks, you're up.
I am. Okay, good morning. So, of course, this is a discussion about tomorrow's discussion, if you will. This is kind of a meeting before the meeting. But because this is such a relatively complex topic, the establishment of a district, which is a weighty decision for the board to make, we've decided to put together this binder, and it's been presented to you. And I was thinking we could go kind of tab by tab, and I can kind of talk about what's actually in the binder, and we can work out any advanced questions prior to tomorrow's meeting, and have a discussion along those lines. And I'll try to keep it just to the point and efficient. Tomorrow's public hearing will require a decision of the board, unlike today's meeting, and so you'll not be expected as part of the district formation process to decide anything today, but tomorrow is going to be a formal hearing, and that is statutorily required, and the board would need to affirmatively decide if you want to keep this this proposal alive, if you will, then the board would need to make a decision tomorrow to issue an order, which would actually set the second hearing, but we're going to get to that in due course as we go through all of this. Let's see. There was one more point preliminarily I was going to make. I guess I can invite, are there any questions before we really dive into the paperwork here, or should we just go ahead and get it rolling?
I just noticed that tab one is huge.
It's huge.
That's the legal side of it.
It is. Yeah, and it's got a lot of pretty important information in it. And so, yeah, this is something that, in order to make an informed decision, I think you're going to need to be pretty familiar with. Turning then to tab one, what we've got here is a one-page memorandum that my office produced, and that describes what basically has occurred thus far and where we're at in this process. And the final paragraph of tab of the memorandum describes that.
I'm still listening. I'm grabbing reading glasses.
Okay. Describes that tomorrow, proposed board order would formally approve the petition for formation of the district and set the date for the second hearing. And that would occur on February 15th of 2017, and that would be the final board action in actually sending this to a ballot. And so that's basically the takeaway from the moment from tab one, and then we can now turn to tab two. So the establishment of a district is far more complex because of the statutes that drive this process than sending like a levy to a ballot. Basically, a board order and some other actions, but largely that's done through a board order, a single vote, if you will. But as I've kind of said previously, there are a number of formal steps in the process, and so tab two designed to tab two is designed to describe what tomorrow's public hearing is going to involve, and most critically, and this is going to be largely for you, actually, versus the chair, is we have a page to the proposed motion. And so if it should be the will of the board to keep this proposal moving, then at the end of the hearing, someone would need to use language basically contained here that we've drafted for you to move that the board do these specific actions. So that's going to be something you'll need to reflect upon tomorrow if you decide to keep this going. Okay, so that's what you need to know about tab two. Okay, here we go. Tab three, this is an overview of the various waypoints in terms of district formation. And as you can see, it all builds toward a May 16 election date. You've got your hearing tomorrow, and you've got your hearing on February 15th. There's a series of notices that have gone out already in the way that the law requires, and there will be a series of notices that go out again following tomorrow's hearing, and then the final order will go to the court on the hearing on the 15th, the second hearing on the 15th. And then I have another role here that's accounted for, where you would direct me, the legal counsel, to certify and file form SEL 801 with the clerk prior to March 16, 2017, but no earlier than March 1st. So there's our timeline, and we can proceed on to tab 4. So we can see what the public is seeing here. This is a copy of the public notice, one of the public notices that went out in a paper of a publication of general circulation. And so there you go. You can see what people know about this. If they know nothing more, they at least have the opportunity to learn this much. So moving on to tab 5. The board will be required to make findings, and among those findings are that the proposal is conforms to the comprehensive plan for the county, and your community development director, who of course is also the planning director, has provided this, I think you should. This would be adequate for the board to make a finding, basically. This letter, you should consider this to be adequate, that the community development director has weighed in on that point, and so you can make a finding. Okay, moving on then to tab 6. So we've got the previously signed order, and the timeline simply dictated for district formation that this process be initiated in December, and so that's what occurred here. And for your reflection, you can see that. Also attached to it, that order also contains resolutions from the cities of Grants Pass and Cave Junction approving the district to be present within the boundaries. Okay. Tab 7, this is, if you could skip anything in terms of reading, this is probably one of the safest sections to read, but it's very important for purposes of establishing what the boundaries actually are. And so we've included the legal descriptions of where this district will actually be located. And tab 8 includes a map of the district. Tab 9 is what you'll be voting on tomorrow.
And question so, back to the map.
Yeah.
The colored portions are odd. Why is it not just the county?
Oh, okay. It's a non-contiguous district. And maybe let's get through one last tab here, and then I know Kate could probably weigh in with a substantial background on that point. So.
Thank you.
But I've just got one more tab, and then we can turn to that. Okay, so this is what you'll actually be voting on tomorrow. And if you do get a chance to review it in advance, then that would be a good opportunity to do that. Anyway, as you'll see, this order does a number of different things. It establishes the name, the district, and as I've stated previously, it does set the timing and date for a second hearing between 9 a.m. and February 15th. And so following that motion under tab 2, if it's approved, then that order is going to be what the board produces tomorrow.
Perfect.
So that pretty much takes us through the binder and hopefully gives a preview of what's going to happen tomorrow. I think there's anticipation that there will be questions about annexation, and we can either maybe we'll hold off on delving into the details of that now. There's a couple of different ways that annexation can come to bear in this question. It's a little bit situationally dependent, depending on who's asking for what, whether you have sort of the majority of electors and the majority of landowners petitioning the board to initiate the process of annexation. That would not necessarily lead to an election. That would probably not lead to an election. But if you have a minority of persons within an area that's proposed to be annexed, petitioning the board down the line after the district gets formed for annexation, then that usually would lead to an election. And so, I'll be present in the hearing. If somebody wants to hear more, I think we'll have to play a little bit by ear in terms of the nature of the questions that come up. But it's very possible that somebody could ask tomorrow about annexation.
So I have one thing already that's in conflict with state law. And tab 8, and it could be a typo, but under tab 8, under section 6, it says that the election of a district, 5 district board members shall be voted for in accordance with ORS 357.231. So being a good parole officer that I am, I looked up the ORS, and it says that effective date of the formation of district occurs in an odd-numbered year, under subsection 2, my apologies, that two district board members shall be elected for four-year terms and the other three district board members shall be elected for two-year terms if the effective date of the formation occurs in an even-numbered year. Okay, so 1 year. I guess I didn't keep reading, so that's my bad. So the last part, if it's in the... No, we are in an odd number year, so we fall under the 2 years. So this was created in an even-numbered year, which puts us under the last section of this. If effective date of the formation occurs in an even-numbered year, two district board members shall be elected for three-year terms, and the other three district board members shall be elected for one-year terms. But by the time it's formated, we'll be in an odd-numbered year, which puts us in the first part, which is the 4 years and 2 years.
Okay.
So going back to Section 2, under governing body district on the first section there, we combined the two. It says two members will be elected for four-year terms and the other three will be for one-year terms. So we need to make sure that's actually in consistency with ORS. My biggest concern about even the state law is having one-year elections. You guys will constantly be having to deal with elections, and the cost of having an election every year is... the way our current system is if it's a general election, the county covers that, but when it's an election just for one body, they take on the cost of that election. And that could be very expensive for the district to have an annual election. But looking at, so going back to 357.231 subsection 2, since this will be effective in an odd number year, we have to look at the four-year terms and the two-year terms, would be my interpretation.
Yeah, I'm working with Tricia on that.
Okay.
So she's the one that has to put out the notice. So we will double-check on that. But you thinking that we're farming it in an odd-numbered year.
In the odd year.
Yeah. Let me correct that. It says if the effective date of the formation. Right. So it won't be effective till June when it's certified. Therefore, it's effective in an odd number year,
yes,
which puts us under the first portion of that subsection 2, which is a four-year term and three two-year terms. Two four-year terms and three two-year terms.
Two or four. And the other three are two. Yeah, there should be two. And actually, I thought that did get changed.
Okay.
Trisha actually...
And it just combined the top and the bottom of them. It took part of one and part of the other. So it's just... I just want to make sure... Don't give any reason for someone to say that's challenged at court and illegal.
I don't think it's
referenced.
So, yeah, the order doesn't reference the length of the time, so that was the notes for the binder.
But is this what people will be seeing? And
it's for you.
It's for you.
Okay.
It's your public document, though. You can release this if you'd like to.
I think it's online now, actually. She has to put the notice out, I believe, on February 3rd, which seems a little bit backwards because we won't have sent it to the ballot yet. So, in other words, she's got to put the notice...
The notice has to be out, but the election will occur with the approval of the May ballot. But
yes,
the notice
so she's
will
already
be there.
Been talking to us about putting it in as a proposed district so that it's clear that the district... In other words, she's got to put a notice out saying that people can... how they apply to be in the board member.
They'll have to be filing for the position so that if it's passed, they're also elected at the same time.
Yes, goes on the same election.
Wow, exciting and scary and all that. So just confirming, their board will be their own governing board, so finance will go through them. As any other district, the county will collect no fees or administrative costs. What's the status with the buildings? Does the county still own those?
The county owns three of the four buildings. The Wolf Creek branch is owned by the Josephine County Library Foundation.
Those other three buildings, we are in a lease agreement. Lease is expected to last until 2020 for $1 per year. Essentially, the lease agreement is what currently provides the library with public library status with the Oregon State Library, because the county is giving something over for a public library, and that's that $1 a year is nominal. So they're saying that you give the buildings and what was the collection of books 10 years ago when we reopened the libraries.
And that's correct in comparison. I mean, like, public safety pays 85 cents a square foot, so I mean, it's a dollar is a discount. Yeah. But with this being just the district itself, you would then be a governing body based on just the district. And so is the has there been any discussion about furthering with the buildings or what the plan would be at that point?
My board of directors, who's mostly present today, who is putting this measure forth, or the proposed district forth, is scheduled to enter into strategic planning to answer that question in February.
Okay. Commissioner Dion, do you have any questions?
No, I don't. A lot of reading.
I have some frequently asked questions I might be able to share with you, and then I can give you a broad overview of this handout so that it's most useful.
I'm wondering, legally, with this being a hearing, are we allowed to accept that in advance of the hearing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Public document, yep. Not a land use hearing. So, yeah.
Just making sure. I had corralling last night in Cave Junction, the land use hearing back.
So there are frequently asked questions in great length on our website at josephinelibrary.org as well. You just go across the top menu bar, and it says Library District, and you can scroll down. We are putting as many questions as we can think of up there. So right now there's some infrequently asked questions as well. We're just making an effort to be thorough and transparent. So it's good information. I feel good about what we've posted. It doesn't have a specific slant. The handout I'm giving you, this front page, has a background slide, which I can explain a little bit. Then it has a current usage slide. And I think yours is...
Did you give one for Commissioner Hare as well?
I will. I talked with Wendy about that.
I don't think I got that one.
No, it's the same one. Mine's just truncated because I didn't want you to have to squint to read.
Okay.
And I printed yours in color, but not mine.
Okay.
Or theirs. Black and white. So, and we're saving money.
That's right.
So, this first two slides that you have, one is a background slide. I can talk about that. Then the next page you have current usage of the library. Both of you are familiar with that because you served on city council. It's used.
And I have my library card.
Excellent. Then that other slide is just the e-book usage and the value of internet. And then we continue on with the volunteer contribution to the library and the breakdown of usage by branch. Then we have how we're funded right now and why this isn't a long-term sustainable solution for library funding. So currently we've got 55%. On average, across 3 years, that's not every single year, but on average, 55% of our revenue comes from donations, not taxes. Then, and grants as well. Then we have our Oregon Public Library standards that we are not meeting, so I can go into that if you have questions about those. And then the next...
So the facilities are not being met?
The facilities are not being met because they're not open. Our main branch is open 24 hours a week.
Yes.
That's why we're here today.
And the district would potentially open your hours to
up
what?
To 40. Yeah. And I can answer that as well. Like further down this down here, we estimate in the feasibility statement that's in the front of your binder that we would be able to open our libraries for 80 to 100 hours across all four branches. And right now I do have a typo in this handout. We're currently open 45 hours across all branches. And we're not meeting that standard, which you can imagine. Mm-hmm. It's kind of obvious. 24 hours a week is not enough.
Then, and you got to go to the website every time and see what the hours are, or when to call, or when to, you know,
yeah,
or
we
drive down and look at the sign.
Every day people come to the door trying to get in our service areas. And then in this page, the page where you have these graphs, mm-hmm, that are colored, This is how we compare to the rest of the state, or actually to Southern Oregon counties, who may be experiencing the ONC funding crisis as well.
Douglas County will be closing their libraries this year.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So this you can see easily how it compares if you have questions about that. I chose hours of operation comparison as well as expenditure on materials comparison because those are the two items that would change when we get enough funding. We would be able to buy more new items for patrons and open our libraries for more hours. Then you see our financial forecast. Essentially, our board describes this as a burn rate. We have a reserve. We're strong fiscal-minded individuals, but we have to dip into our reserve. And if we don't bring in a considerable amount of money in donations specifically, then we dip into reserve to operate the four libraries at the current status. At the current status. And we would like to take it to the level where we're meeting standards, which is a higher status. So then,
and not use the reserve.
And not use the reserve. Or a reserve to be, how would we phrase that? To be good fiscal stewards of funding.
To retain a reserve. Yeah. So you're not depleting it.
Well, and it's one of the main reasons we do receive grants from Oregon Community Foundation and Oregon Cultural Trust. When they're reviewing our finances, the fact that we have reserves is a reason to give us a grant because they know we're not going to be dependent on them year after year.
Quick question. As far as I'm looking at the comparison with the other counties, we've never compared to the other counties by this chart.
And there's a state median in there, too.
But even with that, I mean, it's one of those things, looking back to 2003, 2004, when there was still some financing, you were still receiving the 25 cents from this county, more or less, at that point.
Less.
Okay.
Less even in 2002. The funding crisis started, and let's go back to that first slide, that background slide. So the funding crisis for libraries really started in 1997. When the 33-cent levy that was existing was made a permanent rate under Measure 50 and then rolled into the general fund. So that 33 cents on top of the 25 is the 58 today. Now, it was a levy, and it would have expired after 3 years. So I'm not saying that the libraries owed that money, but that's when the funding crisis happened, and that's when trust was broken, essentially with library patrons and library supporters. And that was after that, levies didn't pass. We have a levy failure in 2004 and a district failure in 2006. And over that period of time, year after year, money was diverted away from the library and over to other departments that needed it, specifically public safety. So then in 2007, after voters with the whole county boundary voted no twice to fund their libraries, they closed the libraries for lack of funding. So that's kind of how that happened.
So that's why you're doing a non-congruent district. You're going after the areas that
have service
and utilize. And
if I could go back in time 20 years, 25 years, I'd build a branch in Merlin and a branch in Hugo and a branch in Selma. And I think we would have more support for libraries because they would have service areas. Mm-hmm. So we find support exists where we have a service area, not 100%. We didn't see a precinct turnout in Wolf Creek, but we included it in this non-contiguous library district in order to keep all four branches open.
So, I mean, just even looking back to the numbers, though, even with the 33 cents there were there, we're not looking to try to compete with the counties. We're just trying to provide the standard the state wants for us.
Yes. I want to bring it up to $3 per capita, and the state median's $3.50. And that's for items, materials, which would include online databases, e-books, children's items. It would be a true benefit to those in the area. Then some questions that happen in... for us, if you look at the two slides that have the map on it, on your handout.
They're in the middle of paper.
Yeah, they are, because I wanted yours to be big. Ours are really tiny. So it's, like you said, will be a smaller service area surrounding the branches. It's a voter-elected governing board. The reason that we're going for a district is because it's separate from county. We really want to honor the voter who votes for libraries. They want to be separate from the county. And it's at 39 cents, which is the same rate we asked for in 2014. And the funds raised would only be used for the district. But then on that second page, you can see some of the questions that come up for people. What happens to people outside the boundary who want to use the library? Well, they can buy a library card to use the library, and that would be an annual fee, and they would be able to borrow books. But they could also, anybody, as in anybody in the United States, in all public libraries across the nation, can go into any public library when it's open and use it as a reading room and access the materials. But when it's closed, borrowing privileges are for those individuals who are paying to support it either by a tax or by a library card fee. Right now, we can't charge a library card fee because our boundary is coextensive with Josephine County. When we shrink that boundary, we retain our public library status under a revised statute, and we can charge for a library card without losing that status, because the statute states that you have to be free to those within your service area. So we're shrinking the service area and then charging outside that boundary. A lot of times people ask about children outside the boundary because we are egalitarian by nature and we want our children to be supported. Technically, they wouldn't be within the boundary, but it's my understanding that most of the leaders in this room advocate for grants and sponsorships to offer library cards to children outside the boundary. And then, I think that covered it, actually.
Did you do any, you know, I know when you talk to people that study voting patterns and whatnot, do you show good support in these areas?
Yeah.
So, you know, that you think that, you know, how people voted on the last one, and you picked those, like, for instance, your area around the city of Cave Junction and Kirby. Did those people support the last library levy?
They did.
Okay.
They did. They
had a pretty good shot at this.
Pretty good shot. It's a good shot. It's going to take a lot of work still. I think there's some competing money measures going up on the ballot.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, we got an earful last night just from... Well, actually, I won't go there because that's probably hearing related as far as commenting. But yeah, people having comments about different things. So,
yeah, and the most of the, I guess I would ask, do you find it relevant for someone to state where they live when they're talking about this library district formation?
I think they're asked to, right?
Because wouldn't it be important to know whether they are within or without of the boundary?
I wouldn't recommend excluding testimony on the basis of being outside the boundary.
You allow the testimony for both, yeah. But you still state where you're residing, because
yes.
This it's an open meeting where anyone is allowed to talk, whether you live there or not.
Okay.
It would be hard to know where they were, if they were living under the boundary.
Yeah. Right.
And it's the testimony
on the assessor's page where you enter your address, and it tells
right.
you exactly
but,
what
I mean, they may not know if they
get well, like. You know, I had my nephews that live in Texas with me and went to the library and got a card for him so he could, you know, it's, where's he? Well, at the moment he was staying with me within the boundary, but he technically resides in Texas. So, you know, it's like, who knows, you know.
I would think of it as the boundary hasn't actually been formed yet.
Yeah.
We're still pretty early in this process in a technical kind of sense. So that would be after tomorrow, but beforehand I think excluding persons would not be... idea.
I would recommend if you know anybody who maybe would think this is a good idea that they would be present, but I'm not suggesting anything.
Yeah, and I think for what you're asking, do you have support in these areas? We analyzed the precinct turnout, certainly, mm-hmm. and it just so happens that it's around areas where we have a branch. In Wolf Creek, there's two precincts there. And the boundary runs right through the building. So
nice.
We had to include two precincts. And both of those precincts voted no. by about 8 votes. And then we included a precinct within the city of Grants Pass because leaving it out meant a lot more work for the surveyor, which was a considerable amount of work. And that was Webster. So you're informed about 3 precincts that voted no that are included in this non-contiguous district. Areas other than that, outside the proposed boundary, we could surmise that they don't receive service. And that is the reason that they historically vote no. Driving 25 miles to access a library takes a certain amount of gumption. And unfortunately, they don't have a library close to them. We want to make sure that the libraries stay open for those people who do support it and have access to it within.
And I think by what you said, if they buy a library card, they become a supporter.
It instantly. And it's not, they're not being kept out.
Outside the district, they have a choice. They want to join in, they become a member and they buy a library card and they're it.
They're treated
just like anybody else in the district.
Mm-hmm. So they
you're
have
not denying
choices.
Access to anybody. You're in fact outside the district, you're denying, you are giving them a choice whether they want to participate or not.
Right.
I'm seeing Lofsadel there.
Well,
good idea.
Your opposition will come from people whether they live in the district or not. It will be irrelevant. And that's historically, we've seen that with other issues when I was at city council. Whether they lived in the city limits or not, they wanted to take part in the discussion about what a city limit situation was that affected people maybe from Selkirk. And, you know, they still would show up and make those comments. So you're still going to have to get the messaging out. You're still going to have to, you're right, it's going to be a lot of work. But it won't be whether you live in the boundary or not. That might be where you focus your support efforts, but your opposition will not be restricted to that. And that's something just as a heads up.
Most I can say to people who oppose your living outside the district is that we heard you. We respected your vote, and now you won't have to pay, and you won't have to have a library.
Yeah. So just as a heads up, that's what I could... I mean, that's what we experienced with some other issues. So
now, outside the district, are they going to get the vote?
No.
Okay, so you just said I respect your vote. Well, you respect their opinion, but they're not going to get the vote.
Oh, true. That's a good point. Historically, for in the democratic process.
Yeah.
Okay. How they
which is pretty significant over the last, since 2004.
Had you considered your board with the governing body having representatives from each of the kind of outside areas for those board members?
I think it's a consideration for people who are interested. It's not within the purview of Josephine Community Libraries to comment on candidates.
So anyone can run it, but you're not restricting it to having representatives from different areas?
Correct. So that would be kind of difficult, I think, for the county clerk's office. So we went with the option of, what is it called?
It's not by zone.
Not by zone.
It's at large.
Thank you.
But you have to live in the district. So you have, so if you go down to apply, Trisha will be able to look at
that. I think that eases recruitment because you may have a real tough time getting somebody in one of your outlying districts to say, I want to be on the board. And if you don't get anybody, then what do you do? Mm-hmm. So I think just using it at large, I think you're probably better off.
That answers your question, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Do you have any other questions that I can help eliminate the legal process on the back? I was surprised to learn that you vote twice.
You mean
more than that? I mean, they've already formally advanced once through the passage of the order in 2016, and then they've got tomorrow, and then they've got the 25th or the 15th.
Yep.
Statutorily driven. I mean, they vote once to put a levy onto a ballot, but because you're creating a district, and this is a heavy decision.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's a separate governing body, so it's got to be done in a very deliberate, statutorily driven way.
And you're going to find some people are going to be opposed just because it's a district, and then other people will support just because it's a district.
Yeah.
So there's not a... If it gets it out of our hands as the county government, try to build that trust back up that was eroded back in the day for something the state did. Okay, yeah.
I think you're on the right track. Getting the library away from county government, you're going to gain some credibility right there.
You guys have a hard job.
is One question that I can foresee coming up is, will the positions be PERS recipients because of governing body?
No, not necessarily. It's not required by law to have PERS. Any newly formed government agency, like a library district or a fire district, can choose any type of beneficiary insurance for their employees.
So that may be one you want to have an answer to ahead of time. PERS is kind of a four-letter word right now in the state.
Yes, the answer is no. Is there anything anybody from my board who I'm representing today would want to add because I'm speaking for you?
The only thing I would require is if you do, you'd have to come up to the table so we can get you on the mic. Please testify tomorrow.
Sure. In favor, I assume.
I'm not going to tell you how to vote.
The only thing I guess I would like to close with is that sometimes it's hard to remember the past. And we're coming up on 10 years since the library system closed. And I just want to remind you that the library system closed. And it was reopened by citizens who've since put in private donation dollars for the last 10 years into the library system, except for the $300,000 that was seed money that was matched at the very beginning. Separate from that, it's $2.2 million in donations and $1.1 million in grants.
That's incredible.
So when we talk about the coextensive boundary, I think it's important to remember that they closed it and that this is a way to keep it open.
I appreciate your fight to keep it open. You know, that's credibility.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing group of people.
It is. When you stop and look at it, to see it was closed 10 years ago, and slowly but surely it's been fighting its way back. And that's commendable.
I think it's it exemplifies citizenship.
Okay, anything else? Thank you.
Thank you
all for being here. We were able to keep this discussion last night away from that topic.
Okay, good.
Anytime somebody brought it up once, it was stopped.
And that can be cured. I mean, we'll go over the dial list script over hearing experts.
One of the things that I did get is Mark, after the meeting came up, he says, you know what?
You guys are still on tape.
And he says, I just appreciate the care of your apology. I said, hey, whoa, I just broke my own rule. You know, relay the last. And they appreciate that.
Good morning.
You know, the whole thing about when you make a mistake, you can try to weed your way out of it. You can just find out that I did it. Today, I'm sorry.
It's the same argument.
You are still on tape.
Are we what?
The tape recorder's still on.
Since we've taken office.
Okay.
It was something that was briefly discussed beforehand, but if you would like us to put it on an agenda.
No, I know. I'm not performing. RCC is tomorrow meeting presented by the attorney professors who are trying to see if we want to opt in. We're named in that thing. RCC came down. We can opt out or stay in.
Okay.
We're meeting tomorrow. So I just want to know if you have no opinion about it yet as a commissioner.
As a body, we have not discussed it.
Yeah.
So
you're in it, aren't you?
And I don't see that changing. But I don't know that. Yeah. I can't speak for the others, but we haven't.
I just want to get your clear event on that, if you had any thoughts.
I didn't know RCC was in it, but that might be worth an interesting conversation.
Attorney for the... That's happening to me. And talk to recall them.
We have a loan request.
We have to decide here this month about opt out or stay.
After they met with, I think you're right now that I think about it. Actually, it was after
you
met with
14.
They just want to get
it. I guess my thought would be, have you had an impact by the reduction of the loans and timbers?
Exactly. Our funds come from tuition dollars.
I have never gone through this process, unfortunately.
How much of your tuition dollars come up to cover the difference? Those were the questions I would say. You can answer those.
State balanced their budget They get down the end, they say, well, we have to have life, but you just raise tuition and cover. So that's where they're going.
So we do have
that. Stay your money or you get money.
Well, that's just it. Do we want students to have an easier way? So that would be the question.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Whatever the contract.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Hall?
They're here to help us.
Oh, wait. I got to grab the other book. We don't need our emergency plan, do we?
No. And this we aren't even talking about the emergency plan.
So this is just a COOP plan?
Not the word. We can speak about that. The plan which will not be named.
The nameless plan.
But first, we're going to talk about Central 360.
Actually, we're going to talk about Forest Line classification stuff.
What he said.
Okay, so you want us to skip the agenda to number 3.
Yeah.
Forest Line classification, Senate Bill 360.
Could we do that in the agenda?
How long do you think?
3 minutes. Probably 10 minutes. Depends on how many questions you guys have.
Don't know yet.
I know.
Let's start with
3
then. You want
to bypass 2 and go to 3.
Yeah,
so we're going to bypass 2 and go to 3.
Yeah.
So
you're
at
one to her, or 2 to her, and...
Okay.
We want to get as many of you out of here as soon as possible.
Saying give her 2.
Oh, 2. I didn't
hear that. Thank you. So I'll let you start.
Okay. First of all, thanks for taking the time to listen to me today. My name is Tyler McCarty. I've worked for the Oregon Department of Forestry Southwest Oregon District for the last 16 years in various capacities, currently as the Grants Pass Unit Forester, overseeing operations in USD County. So what I came to talk to you about today is the forest line classification process. ODF is required to review all lands within our district to determine if they meet the criteria of forest land, to determine if they should be paying fire patrol assessment. Fire patrol assessment is how ODF pays for our district firefighting costs, our initial attack here in the county, in the 2-county area. So our district includes both Josephine and Jackson counties. It also provides access to the landowners to the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. It's a big pot of money that pays for our large fires. So part of this classification process requires the convening of a committee. By statute, the county commissioners of each county are supposed to appoint 3 members to the committee, one by the Oregon State Fire Marshal, one by the Oregon State University Extension, and then one by the district forester.
Is that 3 members for the 2 counties or 3 members from each county?
It depends on what decision you guys make, because what our desire is to run it as a 2-county process. It is allowed in statute, but there's also the option to run it individually, county to county. It's going to be a duplication of effort because 3 of the committee members would have to go to 2 separate meetings, one for each county. So if it's a 2-county process, or if it's a 1-county process, we only need you to appoint 2. But because at this moment we don't know if Jackson County is also going to agree to it, or even if you guys are going to agree to it, I think it's better to recommend 3 individuals so that if we do get
from
to
each county.
Yeah, correct.
Exactly. Treat it as an individual county and then possibility of saying, okay,
correct.
when we establish the ground rules, just say, you know, it'd be better if we joined in the 2-county process and then make that decision at that time.
Yeah, and the recommendation has to come from you.
You're not sure we want to sign on anyway, correct?
Exactly, correct. So that's basically what I came here to talk to you about. ODF protects 1.8 million acres of forest land between the 2 county areas. We're the busiest district in the whole state of Oregon. Run a significant amount of fires compared to any other district in the state of Oregon.
How much of that is shared border to border? Because when we're talking Josephine to Jackson, this fire starts in Josephine and proceeds into Jackson.
Yeah.
Does our authority stop and theirs begin?
No.
Is that the value of the two county?
No, we are a seamless. Our whole operation is integrated between the two county area. We rely a lot on the neighboring county. There is no border there.
Okay.
But from a county standpoint, our authority only extends up to our county border. So we would then work with Jackson County if there were county-type decisions we needed to make. We have an intergovernmental agreement with Jackson County for emergency management, so Sarah and I work seamlessly. But county government-wise, if a decision needed to be made, you would make it for Josephine and they would make it for Jackson, unless you delegated authority to each other, which I don't think you would do.
I was talking strictly about our operation.
Yes.
So the committee is being formed regardless of our participation.
I think by statute, the committee has to be made up of three individuals that you guys appoint. Whether or not you guys can abstain from recommending three individuals for the committee, I honestly don't know the answer to that. So. I don't know what would happen if you said, no, we're not going to appoint somebody, if that's what you were asking.
Well, you said earlier, if you approve.
If you approve to the joint committee process, the two-county process,
okay,
rather than individual county to county. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
In here is some costs. One of the things is our rates vary based on the amount of money that's spent on fire on a given year. It affects the rates the following year. So there is no set rate, but I can tell you what they were last year. It's $2.02 an acre for timber and 89 cents an acre for grazing. There's also a minimum assessment lot. So say a landowner owns 3 acres, they're going to pay a minimum of $18.75. There's also a
certain... How often is that paid?
That's annually.
Okay.
There's also a surcharge lot, so any property that has a residence on it pays us an additional $47.50, and that's because anytime you have houses involved in a wildfire suppression response, it makes it way more complicated. We end up spending way more money on the fires trying to protect those homes. So that's where that came from.
I guess for me, having a committee is one thing to assess the cost that it recovers, but a lot of the costs can be reduced by a quick response and getting fires out. And time after time, we get complaints that we see water trucks along the highway not going in and fighting fires,
yeah,
or the roads are not maintained to allow us to get to the fires.
Yeah.
So that cost incurrence is above what we have control over, so why should we be paying higher costs when it's forest management policy that is driving the cost up?
So ODF only protects private county and BLM lands. The BLM lands are included in this classification.
Are or are not?
Are not.
Okay.
The BLM lands pay, I believe, their lands are already guaranteed to pay us, so they don't need to be reviewed. All the lands in the two county area are paying us. This is just for the private BLM, or private and industry lands. A lot of the industry lands are maintained. A lot of the lands that aren't well maintained are on the BLM or on the Forest Service. So I guess to answer your question is, we're going to do the best we can. Our priority is putting them out as small as we can.
And you guys do a good job. I mean, you respond to any sign of smoke anywhere, and you go night or day, you guys are flying to those responses. So you do a good job around here.
Yeah, we take pride in that.
Yep. I used to dispatch for you guys at night.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So as we take over at close, and we'd call you and go. But no, you guys do a good job. I think for me, though, the concern is the increasing cost of fighting fires when there's other things that can help keep those costs down.
Yeah, we're actually doing, I think it actually just wrapped up. I haven't had a chance to read the report yet, but they did a study on the BLM lands and if they're paying their fair share. And I think what came out is they're actually not paying their fair share of fire suppression. And so I think you'll see stuff coming out in the future, some publications and some action on that.
have a question, and and this is one of those, because of my ignorance about not ever reading my tax statement. Yeah. On that tax statement, does the Oregon Department of Forestry Southwest Oregon Division have a
slot
where we portion of property taxes goes right to you?
Yes, sir.
And that's at a rate of, I didn't say.
It doesn't say, because it changes year to year. Last year it was $2.02 an acre.
And you kind of look at the last year and say, you know what, we got to bump that up.
Yeah, it's all based.
Or we had a really good year. Do you ever take it down?
Yeah, it actually it does fluctuate. They will go up and down. And if we save money, that will affect the rates the next year. And also, this classification process doesn't affect our budget. Our budget is our budget. Say we add more tax lots to our rolls, it will reduce the burden on the other landowners by reducing their costs. If we subtract lots from our rolls, then it may increase it slightly. Just from my experience, I spent the majority of my time on the Jackson County side, and the first 15 years, I've only been over here for a year. Knowing where I fought fire over in Jackson County, I can see tax lots being added in that county. I don't see a whole lot of change in this county coming. But then again, I'm not part of the committee, and I won't be making those decisions. But just going from where we've historically fought fire.
Okay, what the committee's going to do is what?
They're going to classify
each individual.
They're going to be looking at the tax lots to determine if they should or should not be paying, to if they meet the definition of forest land.
Will they reassess the green area? Is that part of this? So that is actually hugely advantageous for us to have done. So in Josephine County, there is an area called the green area, and because it is not assessed
a forest patrol assessment.
They don't have to follow fire season if they're outside of a fire district. Because part of what happens is that when fire season happens, their authority kicks in and they get to regulate burning on private lands. But if they're not assessed a tax, then their authority doesn't
kick in. Their authority doesn't go.
Yeah.
So if you're within the city limits,
on or within an eighth of a mile. So it can even be inside the green area, but only within an eighth of a mile. And the eighth of a mile is I guess that's what they figured back in the day. If you have a fire within an eighth of a mile, it's a threat. Yeah, exactly.
So many years ago now, I guess it was probably 06, I dealt with a case out in Upper River Road where someone was open burning in the middle of fire season and they lit their neighbor's gazebo on fire. And they called the county. And the only thing I could do was air quality maintenance stuff, because there was nothing that said they couldn't burn in the middle of fire season.
Other than common sense,
but without the fire district, there is no authority that says you can't burn in the middle of fire season. So as we go forth and look at assessing these properties, it isn't just about assessing and getting dollars, it's about the safety of the citizens. Is this property, should it be classified as forest land? Is it flammable such that it meets those criteria? And if the answer is yes, then that also gets us to no burning during fire season.
So what does this, with your example of the gazebo, how would this change that?
There's a possibility that some of the properties, because it's been so long since that green area was ever defined.
So you want to read this, part of this thing is going to redefine, right. It's going to start all over and say, let's bring this up to date.
It could change our borders, on where we respond.
Right.
Or don't respond.
Yeah.
Well, and even the city of Grants Pass had the fire going up the hill up by Hillcrest behind where All Care just went in a couple of years ago. And it's kind of forest land right there, but it's not,
Was that on the other side of the freeway?
No, on this side.
Oh, okay.
That one was even more exciting.
I was on that one, yeah.
My family lived on Foothill, and it was like, that's going towards my cousin's house. That's not good, that kind of thing. But
once you can point in any direction, you're pointing at our cousin's house.
It's okay. It's the same for me in Jackson County.
So I guess for me, I'm looking at this district, and out of the last 10 years, or 11 years on here, the cost overall, it'd be interesting to see totals per county, kind of thing, as far as cost for firefighting, because for the most part, Jackson County outburns us quite a bit.
Yeah, this is the cost per county. It says Medford and Grants Pass, but it's Josephine Jackson County.
That's how I read it. But I'm just saying, they outburn us a lot, so we're having to pay for their fires as well, because we're in the same district.
No, I would. I think if you look at the totals, if you were to total it all out, it's actually pretty close. Over here in Justine County, the ground is much steeper, much more difficult to fight it in, which makes it more costly in the end. If you look at 2013's figures, that it throws
which fire was that one? That was the smoky year.
That was Big Windy, Brimstone, and the Douglas Complex.
What happened in 13? They grass passed for 39,000.
That's million.
Those three fires.
That's what we just were talking about.
Yep, they were in the remote, rugged terrain.
Okay. Of which, it shut down everything there. So, okay, so what's the time frame of this as far as you needing a decision?
We would like a recommendation from you, hopefully by the middle of February. February 15th is what we're hoping you can do. And we're wanting to have the first committee meeting towards the end of February, concluding the whole process spring of 2018.
So
it's going to be quite a commitment for whoever you appoint. One of the, something that when I didn't write these letters, but after reading through it and knowing the ORS, one of the three committee members that you appoint needs to be an owner of forest land in the county. That's not listed in either of the documents.
I think, okay, and it's curious that OSU Extension gets to have a vote on who's on there. Is it one per county, or is it?
It would be, because we have one extension office, likely that one person they appoint is going to serve if we have two committees on both. Same with state fire marshals. We have one fire marshal down here that serves both Douglas and Klamath counties, so likely he's going to be on both.
So bear with me. I mean, Forest Land Classification Project is going to be a five-member committee comprised of three members by the board. That's our obligation as three members. And one member appointed by the OSU Extension Service, and one member by Oregon State Forester. Okay.
Correct.
We have a list of qualifications for we take applicants for these and. Then screen them?
We can recommend individuals to you, but the decision is yours, whoever you want to appoint.
I'm just wondering if we need to put this on, we need to put it on another discussion to have what our participation is, what our recruitment would be, when would it be a good time to do that?
Okay, I'll schedule that with Jenny.
Okay. Because just procedure-wise, we'd have to decide on how that process would go and all that kind of stuff. So if this needs to be decided in the next, by mid-February, we would have to.
That's going to be tough, getting the full board, having the full board together by that time frame.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Well, then as soon as you guys can do it, I mean.
Yeah, I know people I would recommend.
I don't think it's critical.
Yeah, I know people I'd recommend right now, but it's just a matter of, it's not my decision, it's the board's decision.
Sure.
So we have to be able to have that discussion. And I do not feel comfortable going forward with that without our liaison to Forest Lands and ONC Lands to maybe counter my opinion. Because, like I said, I know who I'd even recommend, but that's been his liaison. It's not right of us to do that without him when we have time to do that.
And we scheduled this, I think, in November. And so today's meeting. And so
the governor's meeting that he got convened for was only formed 2 weeks ago, I think. So this was very quick.
Yeah, I don't think it's critical if it's delayed a month or even two.
Well, it could be. It won't be mid-February.
No, perfect.
All right, so it's just if we can, and we need to just get it back on the schedule for, and then the discussion at that point would be what would our process be, who would we recommend, do we want to go forward, that kind of thing.
And would you be amenable to a two-county process? Our fire plan is two-county. We do a great deal, two-county.
And that's the one where we'd only recommend two people to it?
I would still recommend three because we would still be, it would hang on Jackson County agreeing to it as well.
Okay.
That's because what my boss's letter says as well.
Does the board stay the same? If we have a two-county, is there still five members on the committee?
No, you would have more. You would have at least You'd have at least seven.
Okay.
Is there a chance if we don't go with a regional board that the classification criteria could be different from county to county?
No. Okay. The criteria is the criteria.
Okay.
We're so close to Jackson, but we on other issues, every time we enter into some kind of partnership with Jackson County,
yeah,
it's pretty lopsided. Everything goes that way, but.
Yeah, and fire suppression is not, and right. I don't see this process being that way at all.
Okay. Sometimes so, they have a big issue and we have a small one, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, you read the numbers were pretty consistent.
Yeah, throughout my career, and that's been the last 16 years, if Jackson County's not busy, Joskin County is. If Joskin County's busy, Jackson County is.
And that's kind of good because we don't want to busy at the same time.
Exactly.
Really, I will say that within all the disciplines that I work, fire suppression, I mean, truly, those guys know no bounds, no jurisdictional line. It is seamless between the counties with ODF. It's amazing.
And this number you call it, this tax that you collect or mm-hmm. coverage or whatever it is,
yeah,
does it pay the freight on this?
Oh, yes, it does. So a portion of it goes to our district funds. That's what provides for our helicopter sitting in Medford, our helicopter sitting in here in Grants Pass, all of our seasonal firefighters, the money to build our fire engines, which we build in-house. And then a portion of it goes to the Working Forest Land Protection Fund, which is that statewide pot of money that pays for large fires. That's a huge benefit to our district because you have landowners in Astoria and other parts of Oregon that never burn. And so those landowners are bearing the cost for these large fires that we have down in our neck of the woods. So it's a good deal for our landowners, in my opinion.
For now. Who knows if that'll always be. All right, so Terry's going to get scheduled for us to have further discussion on. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
I appreciate it. Nice meeting you.
I'm going to put this on the back track for you.
Thanks. You guys have a good day. And I should mention also that the Senate Bill 360 process will get going towards the end of the classification process. The Senate Bill 360 process we've already gone through once, so I don't anticipate any big coming out of it, any major changes or anything like that. I just wanted to mention it to you. Okay. Thank you.
Working our way up. And we believe one to Terry. Simon already has one. All right, so the COOP plan.
So we had talked previously about the desire for a county continuity of operations plan. I've actually since spoken with JJ, and CIS has asked him if we have a county COOP plan, and we don't, not a real county. And so it kind of sounds like there's a lot of interest in moving forward with having this, and I think it's important, especially in light of the winter storms that we have, because we still have the obligation to deliver some services regardless of conditions. Do we know what those services are, and do we have a plan to deliver them? I don't know if I have the answer to that.
Well, and that's the question. I mean, even last night, the question came up is, what is the county's obligation to provide what services? Portland did not use snowplows on all the side streets. They plowed the highway only and sent the ones that were offered by Washington back. We had our public works out for 3 days, 4 days snowplowing, and are we obligated to do that on every street? Or is there less? So as far as what is continuation of operations include, is it making sure every employee can get to work? Is it making sure that every county citizen can get to the county? So defining that level of operations, I think we talked about defining critical services at one point of what the human services.
I think it's very important to define what that is because there's a liability that goes along with that.
Exactly.
Huge liability. If we promise we're going to do something and we don't, and there's something happens because we didn't get there or we didn't do our side of it, But if we could say, no, that isn't in our plan, then that, you know, for us to deliver water to you because you're well stocked, that's not our problem.
Right.
But I think we need to find that, because I think it was very unclear last night. They absolutely, when we, I don't think we even had a sufficient answer for them as to what was our obligation.
So
they're 2.5 feet of snow.
The continuity of operations plan is a good place to start that conversation, because what it does is it looks at the statutory obligations of county government, because that's really the basis of
what
the law says we have to deliver. And so from that, we're able to then make plans. And I'll use WIC vouchers as an example from public health. Are you familiar with WIC vouchers?
No.
Women, infant, children, if you got a kid under 5 or a pregnant mom, they get vouchers to go towards certain foods that have to be a part of your diet for health. So you can get vegetables or milk or cheese.
Cheese, peanut butter, that kind of thing. And there are statutory requirements that go along with those vouchers about making those available. And so when I was with public health, those were some of the conversations that we had in our continuity of operations planning. Well, what if our building blew up? How would we go ahead and still make those vouchers available? Because we have to, and people depend on those services, and people depend on many services the county government provides. So that plan helps us define those and then look at how we're going to continue to provide those under different scenarios. If our building is operable, if our building is not operable or partially operable, those kinds of things. From there, I think it would be good if we ultimately had discussions about, are there other things we're going to do for the public? And it's kind of it's a little bit down a path that wasn't on the agenda today. But we don't have a statutory obligation to provide shelter, emergency shelter, in a disaster situation. That is nowhere in statute. But many counties do. Currently, we work with the Red Cross, and they provide those emergency shelters. We ought to probably make some decisions as a county about what we're going to do, so that we can make sure that our plans accurately reflect that.
So I understand that CIS has a template for creating a COOP plan.
I don't know if they do or not. When JJ and I talked, he said that what he expressed to me is that they actually have a service where if you fill out one of their forms based on the information in your COOP plan, such as what all you would need to sustain critical services, you put that on a list, and if you have a disaster, you can say, hey, I need that stuff that's on my list, and they come and provide it for you. That's part of our insurance.
He told me they actually have a template for creating a COOP plan as well.
It could be the same thing, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wonder if it's...
Yeah.
I mean, but that was his language he used yesterday,
right.
Was...
Okay.
Well, I think if we had a list of things that we're going to do, another thing we talked about last night and we visited a little bit about was where do we stop, and then telling people and helping them with where their responsibility starts.
Right.
You know, I think they were going to have that emergency workshop or fair.
Yes.
So, you know, survival fair or whatever they were going to have out there.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called?
Preparedness fair.
Preparedness fair.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if we can say we're going to take you to this level, or this level is available through county services, then they know that if it's not on that list, then they need to provide fresh water and a can of beans and the next batteries for the flashlight and so on and so forth.
Right. And we've been doing that kind of outreach for years. Mm-hmm. It's surprising how many people still don't realize that that county government isn't planning for them individually. But the way that it sits right now is that we don't have anything specifically written or published anywhere that citizens can access that clearly delineates what government will do and not do in Josephine County. And I don't know if that's something we can ever have, but I can see it being a somewhat helpful planning tool while at the same time also potentially making people angry at us.
Internal and external, because you're going to have different continuity of operation requirements for different programs.
Exactly.
Public health being different than public works, being different than parole and probation.
Right.
So external continuity, but also internal. Who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to make payroll happen? Mm-hmm. If the courthouse, if we we have a Cascadian, the courthouse is condemned. You know, where are we going to set up to operate finance or
your
resources?
House.
Yeah,
your
in the garage. So those kinds of things. There's external and internal. And I think each department is going to be somewhat unique. I know we've had discussions, lipstick discussions, what is minimum level of service? And frankly, it was unanimous. We don't know. There is no standard minimum level. So to a great extent, it is up to the, in the case of the sheriff, the elected sheriff, to say, this is what I feel the minimum level of service is for me, for my, and a different sheriff might have a different, but you have to rely on your professional managers to a certain extent to say, this is the minimum level of service that we can provide or should provide. It probably is not listed in statute.
Well, and we may end up with multiple levels, mm-hmm. because there are minimum services defined by statute that we have to provide.
In certain cases, sure.
And that's one level. Now, ultimately, the board and, you know, sometimes the department managers need to look at that and say, well, is that absolutely bare bones acceptable for my department?
Where do I find that list?
It's all in Oregon Revised Statutes. So each of us has Oregon Revised Statutes that govern what we do. I don't know about because you're an internal service.
But theoretically, in our budget book, at the beginning of each department, they list their defining statutes or their minimum mandated services. But again, I'm going to go back to that.
That doesn't define level of service.
Level of service, you know.
Because being a parole officer is required by state statute or to supervise
felons. But
does that
mean visit once a week or
once a month? And that's step by county and, yeah. You know, and an emergency is anything there. So.
And like the clerk, you know, the clerk has to do recordings. I guess that's their minimum level. But does that mean daily or once a week or every other week? So what is a minimum level of service? What is that mandate? And there can be a mandate, but then there's that interpretation of what does that really mean to as providing interaction with the citizens.
So I'm going to get to the bottom line. You have before us a basically a bid or a quote from a hosted COOP plan, so a COOP solution, and we're looking at this would be an ongoing annual fee of a annual license subscription of $10,000 plus any other licenses.
No. So this, the state went out to bid, Oregon Emergency Management. So what you're looking at is a menu of services available to counties. The annual licensing is already paid by the state, and that is expected to continue. So the county would not need to pay for any of the online licensing fees. The only piece that the counties would need to pay for were any of their COOP solution packages. So the vendor will come in and walk your staff through the formation of your COOP plan and then assist you in putting that into the software. From the software, you can print out a written plan at any point in time. So it isn't that it's just in a system and then if the system goes away, it's lost forever. And Oregon Emergency Management pays for our licensing for that system.
So we're only looking at additional service packages, item 4.2? Is that what you're talking about?
Section 3, starting on page 3, lists out additional service packages. And they are of varying complexities. Jackson County used 3.10, and they...
3.10
is the full meal deal, and it worked quite well for them.
Well, yeah, sure, it should cover everything.
Right.
But so that covers all of the above, right?
It covers...
44.6.
Yes.
Covered all of the above, everything from 3.10 to 3.1. The 3.1 to 3.10 would be in 3.10.
Yes.
Which is full service.
The package. That's correct. So what this means is that the people from the company would come out. They would facilitate the meetings. They would train all of the department heads or whoever that COOP program manager is for each department on how to use the software. They would facilitate that whole planning process. And then they would conduct, they do all of what's called deconfliction. So making sure that we're not all relying on the same resources and making sure that all the department plans work together. Then they would conduct an exercise for us and make recommendations for how we would maintain our plan.
And 3.10, that's just a one-shot deal. You don't have to do that every year.
That is a one-shot deal.
Okay, that's not dues or anything into this.
Okay. No. It is a finite assignment that should give us a plan and a maintenance schedule that as long as we maintain, based on their recommendations, our COOP plan, then we should always have a COOP plan. And they would not come back and need to help us again.
And they keep you updated on any updates and...
It's an online software portal, so it isn't something that is downloaded locally.
Okay.
When the state went out to bid a couple of years ago, we actually found that a number of different entities all over the state were already using this system, actually nationally, but what we really care about is Oregon. And everyone was really pleased with it. So it was easier when the state bid came back that this is the company that they were going to use. And we said, well, a lot of people are using that already and they're happy. Part of my challenge is, as much as I love writing plans, I don't have the time to put into writing a COOP plan for the county, the kind that we really need.
Well, I'm afraid you would miss something.
I could.
But that's why CIS would provide a template that we don't miss something.
Right.
And I think before we jump on board anything, we need to explore what is available there. Because if there's something provided, just looking at these costs, of the first 3.1 through 3.8 is $63,450. Now 3.9 says it's the initial orientation package with the full service package. So it tells me that means you have to have that in addition to the full service package. That is $65,200 for those two things, the full package plus the orientation. That's not even including an hourly consulting fee of $130. So how many hours at 180, if we go back to 3.10, 180 days times 8 hours times $130.
So my understanding is that our cost would not exceed the amount listed in 3.10. Jackson County's cost did not exceed that amount. There is nothing else required. We can use the template that is in the software. We can use the software right now. It isn't a matter of not having a template. It's a matter of having someone to sit down and not just train all of the department heads or the COOP program managers, but to shepherd them through the process. We've been trying to do this COOP thing for years, and some departments have COOPs, some departments have different understandings of what a COOP is. And our COOPs don't work together. They don't work with the one in the courts. We need to have someone who has the time to dedicate to actually make sure that everybody's on the same page and spend the time to write a cohesive plan with all the departments.
So you're saying the only cost would be $44,600 and not a penny more?
That is correct.
I guess I would want to see that in writing before I... Right, I wanted, because the fact that they have an hourly consulting fee above that is disconcerting to me. Because my department went through a SAS, which is a software as a service, which this is,
yes.
With something other agencies were doing, the state was recommending for our online medical, basically documentation. We call it ECHO, but it was for alcohol drug treatment. Stuff to comply with state requirements for electronic filing and record keeping. And we were sold, this is all it'll be, and hogwash. is all I could say to that. So how far along is Jackson County in their process?
They're done.
And they can show that they were able to get this done and it didn't cost anything more?
Yes.
And how many years ago did they do it?
Two.
So they can show if there's been any ongoing costs?
Yes.
Can you have Sarah provide that for us?
Yes.
Because that would be something that I want to... What is ongoing costs? What is ongoing maintenance? What other consulting fees? What has or has not been included? So I just like an example for to make sure that there's not any hidden thing that's going to come back. And then if Oregon Emergency Management decides to stop paying the annual license, we would be picking up a $10,000 annual fee as well.
Yes, we would.
Is there any guarantee from them that they're going to continue paying that fee?
They're funding it out of Homeland Security dollars. And so with other projects like that, they have been funding them for more than 10 years.
So what are the funding options for this $44,600 as far as... I know you said there's potentially a grant that would take us till October before it even... would find out if we received that grant, but maybe not even...
We've already passed the deadline. It was due last Friday.
Okay. So is there any federal grants or anything else at any level, or any Title III monies, or any other title monies, or any other sources of money that would cover this?
I'm not aware of any.
So where does this come from on our budget? General fund?
That's about the only place you can take it. And traditionally, that's what we've done. If we have any kind of a cost that's a general, that applies to all departments, all county-wide, it's not specifically benefiting public works, it's a county, county mandate or county-wide service, or county-wide requirement. And so those things, traditionally, we take out of general fund.
Well, and out of consideration to... the time frame of it would be how many departments do we have and divide the cost per capita between departments potentially and divide the cost of.
Another way to do that, sure. But then
because we get outside money from public works, outside money from community corrections,
right.
Outside money from different agencies that could be contributing towards this cost, and sharing the burden between the departments is not such a hit on one entity.
And that's true, but if you have a department, say public health, that already has a coop, do they get credit for that? Because it sounds like the price is going to be more or less the $44,000 or whatever the price is. So do we give any consideration to a department that's already...
If we're having an outside consulting group come in to get us a countywide coop,
yeah.
I think public health is on the table to be relooked at, mm-hmm. and get the whole process re-evaluated to make sure it's in consistency with
sure.
the rest of the county. So no, I don't think it would. Could their time be quicker, maybe? Potentially,
and versus someone like finance who doesn't have a coup at all.
Yeah.
Or anything of that nature. The other two things that I thought of is that, frankly, if we've gone this long without it, I don't see the urgency that it has to be this month, this year. Certainly we can take the time to look for grants to
mm-hmm.
see if there's other funding sources, even if that funding source may be an opportunity, this next coming year. Also, see if CIS, which I don't know whether CIS would give us some kind of an offset if we do have a coop. I don't know if we, if we have a coop, then they give us a credit or a reduction of our premiums, so that might help.
I definitely think all that should be explored. The other piece of it is $44,600 coming out of the general fund is potentially a half a deputy next year when we're looking at maybe closing facilities. And so I'm not really inclined to be wanting to take general fund dollars out when we have nothing going back in right now. And I think every financial option to explore to come up for the funding for this is appropriate, including sharing the cost between other departments.
Is there a certain amount of this we can get done on our own without jumping in full bore to get a complete overview of it, or is...
When you add up all the costs individually, it's $20,000 more than that full package cost, $19,000 more.
Right. I understand that. But as we're saying, you know, we're going to have to wait a little while before we find out the full impact of what's going to happen with public safety. As it, you know, there's options on the table. We don't know if any of those are ever going to come to fruition. So I don't know. And you said we have a little time to stew on this.
I would.
No deadline.
There's no deadline. Commissioner Hare expressed urgency to me last fall that he really wanted something like this, and that as we continue towards some potentially harder times, and we've had these winter storms, I think it's important that we have something like this in place. How much can we do on our own depends on how much staff time you can have dedicated. If you want to totally redirect what I do,
we're hoping we're hitting the base, touching the bases. And,
right. I don't mean that flippantly at all. I work for you. But I can tell you that I don't have the time to do this. And in order to do something like this correctly, you need a person or a team of people that are dedicated, that are keeping everybody rowing the boat in the same direction.
And they're going to know the questions, all the questions to ask for. If we miss one of those, the liability.
Quite frankly, the full service package is the best deal for what is, I mean, the other cost is $63,000 for the other ones before it without everything included. So, I mean, it's definitely a cost savings to get the most bang for the buck. My concern, though, is where are we going to pay for it? And quite honestly, I'm not opposed to sharing the absorption on departments and looking at that impact of, you know, one department. I'm not saying they have funding available. I'm just saying one department that we forget to think about is the airport. They had to keep the runway clear during the snowstorms. And so we forget that while we're not even driving, somebody might be flying. Why, I don't know. But it's still a requirement of a minimum mandate. And without us having that level of service defined of those minimum mandates, we don't even know what to prepare for. And that's the urgency that I see, is that we need to establish what is that minimum line. And that's what we talked about straight away our first week here when we were closed for 2.5 days. What needed to be here? Well, one of the impacts was payroll, getting out. Are we getting billing to other vendors out? Are those critical functions? I'm talking finance because, you know, he says he doesn't have a plan, so I'm making one for him. No, it's two. I'm just saying that if we don't define it.
We work from home.
Yeah, that's.
And we did.
Yeah.
Which is great, and that's something that we kind of have defined. And I love our IT department. I love Jackson County's just because they're super nice folks, but you are so not allowed to telework down there. Here, we're already set up for that. And so we're able to sustain the different operations because our IT folks think outside of the box. They want us to be able to do the things that we need to do, and it's a great option.
Yeah. No, the VPN function's great. But at the same time, I don't want every county employee working from home where is that level defined of minimum service required of what has to be done? Otherwise, I'm sorry, this isn't covered right now, or this is covered. So,
well, I agree with Jenny that it's not going to happen unless you dedicate somebody to that task.
Yep.
To just make a request or even a mandate to say to all departments, you know, you will develop a COOP, you will... I mean, that works to a limited extent, but you're going to have a variety of results.
Yeah, you know? Your stand. The thing about going with 3.10 is standardization.
Yeah.
All departments have to answer the same question, mm-hmm. and nobody misses anything. You turn it over, basically, you turn it over to the professional. Not that you're not, but...
Right. Well, sure. I mean, I could hire somebody to do part of my other parts of the job, and I could work on this. I am qualified to do it, but time is honestly part of the problem.
Right.
There are other firms out there, not that have the software portal, but if you would rather have me get some other prices, I can do that. The reason that I was swayed by this was, number one, Jackson County used them successfully. Was it a perfect process? No. And I haven't ever had a perfect process with any contractors that I've worked with ever, which just makes me sad. But apparently that's how it is. But these are the folks that have the software portal, that maintain that software portal that we have free access to. And honestly, having something online makes better sense to me. The program automatically does a whole lot of things. It allows us to mash stuff up or say how many people are relying on this resource, and it'll spit out that report to you. And that's a lot harder to do if you're trying to search a Word document or something that isn't in a database the way that this is. So I'm a fan of that. It seems most efficient, which then made it seem most efficient to go ahead and have those folks be the ones with whom we contracted to build the plan itself. But
a state price agreement, too.
On a state price agreement, right, so we don't have to go out to bid or any of that.
Now, because we have this in place, if we say, okay, we're going to go ahead with this, and because we have this in our resume, does that help us with grants or anything else that we can apply for? Is that a question, or does that add credibility to our cause when you're applying for grants at all and say, yeah, we have a coup?
Probably not. But what I will tell you is that I have watched through the years as things have been recommended, and then strenuously recommended, and then they were mandated. And I think it's only a matter of time before we're mandated, or our other departments are mandated to have this kind of plan.
I think that some of the things that would be helpful for me to make a decision on time frame, one, getting the documentation from the actual cost Jackson County incurred, and the last 2 years of any ongoing costs. I would like CIS contacted and determine, is there cost savings to get the plan done? Is there any cost offset if they would help us pay for it up front to get it done? Is there any training they offer, things that we can help facilitate? I don't know, just checking out, exploring what CIS is there. And I don't know who the right person to do that is. If it's you, because you're familiar with the plan.
It'll be JJ, but I'll
work with you. Okay, so, and then from there is there a database of grants that shows us a time frame of what's coming up, or deadlines or anything else like that, that we can look at in the next 6 months if we did this? Is there something we can apply for and look at that would pay for it? I mean, just... let's make sure we've covered all our bases, that we've explored options before we're taking money out of general fund.
Do you have access to that grant?
Yeah,
whatever that. Yeah. Name. No, Esri is our
mapping. Right. Whatever that name of that grant thing is.
Yes.
Can you look at
no,
that?
No, I don't have access, but Wendy has access, so I can get access.
Okay.
We have a subscription to a grant service that provides us, you know, all kinds of access to all kinds of grants everywhere that the departments use. Several of the departments use, and so that's what she's referring to.
The county doesn't have a dedicated grant writer like the city does.
No, we do not. The departments, fair. So we've got Mary Groves on the fair board, and she does, apparently, she's the grant writer designee for the fair. And that's about it as far as anybody that I know of by name that has, you know, that in their title. Sarah Wright has been doing a lot of grant looking up for parks. Of course, Larry does his thing with FAA and those others.
Angie does things in coordination with the courts for drug court.
Right. So,
from community corrections, because we administer the drug court grants.
But it's not like, and I shouldn't, you know, but it's not like her job is a grant writer. It's not. She's got all kinds of other responsibilities.
It's just one of those things that fell on her shoulders.
One of the things that she has to do, yeah.
Yeah.
So we do have, though, a subscription service that we pay for. Is available.
I think it would be worth contacting AOC and seeing if they have any assistance for grant writing opportunities or anything like that that they can offer. Or also any suggestions for funding source for getting a coop in place. Since we pay membership to AOC, might as well see what other options are there.
And they have training for grant writing too.
Oh, there's training constantly for grant writing. It's just a matter of that doesn't mean that you... We send a couple...
Resources,
And there's constantly nuances with grants as far as changing what they're looking for, changing what they will grant for, and who, you know, it's... The Sobering Center, when I was on the board for the Sobering Center, we hired somebody to be a grant writer. Yeah. And it's not cheap, and there's a process and education with it of why you get denied, and you learn from that, and then you go through and you know... Everybody is in that boat of dealing with grants. That's why the city has paid for a full-time grant writer. But if we have subscriptions for AOC and CIS,
yep.
I think that should at least be explored too.
We'll look at that.
Okay.
When you look at the AOC?
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be awesome.
I know what it stands for, and that's...
Association Oregon Counties?
Right, but that is where my experience comes.
Well, they, I mean...
You're not... Very much farther behind me.
I asked, just to give a heads up, I asked them to coordinate coming to our county and providing a public information officer training to all our elected and directors and managers.
Oh.
And so it hasn't been scheduled yet, but it is something that is a service they provide us as a membership.
Sure.
So therefore, it's not going to be a cost other than us attending. Mm-hmm. And... we need to be more intentional, and so...
Is that what, the one we were going to try to host for, include Curry and Douglas and Jackson in?
So?
Get a regional?
We could.
Down there and host it in Grand Pass?
We could, so long as we're not paying for it, I don't care. I just want us to have the training as our staff, and I'd be happy to host a phenomenal training.
Well, hosting does imply some sort
coffee.
Of cost, yeah.
Coffee snacks. I hear you. Okay, so as far as this goes, time frame that you think is appropriate to get this information gathered to come back and talk about. What's...
Sarah is out of the country. She'll be back.
That's inexcusable.
I'm on call for her, so that she'll be on call for me when I'm gone. We both are not back in the office until the 13th. So I can ask her while I'm gone to collect that information, and then in the meantime I can also check with JJ to check with CIS. So I should be able to have answers by the week of the February 13th.
Okay, and I'm gone that whole week. Simon's gone.
I'm gone the 9th through the 12th.
You're gone the week before, but the 13th is AOC day at the county.
I'm going to leave too.
Wait, you just left.
So Monday, Tuesday, I'm supposed to be in Salem, and then Dan and I both are back in Salem Thursday, Friday, Saturday for County College. So maybe the week after would be a week to
the end of February.
To convene and see if we
give
could.
You a little more time.
Jenny, we can schedule that together.
Yeah, I'm already on. Yeah, I'm not sure how that will work.
We'll figure out something.
Okay. But, so hopefully not too long, but at least put it out to next month. Mm-hmm. And then if we have this stuff answered, then we can at least say, we can feel that we're making an informed decision.
Did you want me to check with the other vendor that I'm aware of that does this kind of planning? I think they're based in Portland, and just inquire.
Where are these people out of?
They're back east, but Marilyn, who is our, would be our local person, lives, I believe, in Vancouver, so Portland.
I guess I would expect that for any plan that we've explored all our options as far as thoroughness and cost and everything like that, so...
probably wouldn't hurt to have another bid or...
Are we required to get three different comparables?
No.
No, if it's a state price agreement, they've already gone through that process.
Well, and that's part of the issue. If OEM is paying for the licensing with this one, the state has kind of authorized them to be the company to use.
Yes. However, we can do what we want. So we can use the software portal because it's available to us. We can have a different consultant help us build our plan. I mean, it's our world, literally, for what we want to do.
CIS templates.
Right.
Want, so.
We can, yeah. So.
Or we can keep doing what we're doing and
not have a coop at all?
Well, that's true, but I think that your point about the $10,000 a year ongoing price is potentially, I mean, if OEM ever stops paying for it, I think that that's an important thing to consider. And so in checking with actually the company that put our emergency operations plans together, which we agreed was not a good idea for them to do the entire state at one time, but as a consulting company, they do good work, and ask them.
But if they're paying $10,000 for the entire state, why would we be?
They're not. I think that is a county cost.
Oh, county by county, we're paying the $10,000 OEM.
It's entities are by size, and we're 51 yeah. to 500 FTEs okay. with 4 to 15 locations. So it goes into the $10,000 price
I
for
see.
Our entity.
I see, but OEM will pick that up. Okay.
And that $10,000 gives us access to the portal, correct?
Yes, it does. And the consulting hours, a lot of places include their 911 center, fire districts, things that are not that county entity. And so should we want to do that, which I'm not proposing, that would be above and beyond the price that we're quoted in here. So above and beyond the $44,600, that is for one entity to have them come and write the plan, not multiple entities working together. Does that make sense what I said?
I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
So exciting.
Lots of work to do.
I'm trying to think. So under other, do you have any other items for us?
Gosh, there was one, but I can't remember what it is right now. Just ongoing. I met with Lisa this morning from Veterans. She's getting her goals put together for us.
Cool.
Very minimal.
And I had a meeting with airports yesterday and at juvenile this afternoon. So, and I'm just looking at maybe calendar-wise, looking at this week.
I also went out and looked at it. I looked at a problem out on Office Trainer Gap. So I'll take that up with Mr. Brandis, go from there. And I'm kind of making a list of the complaints, kind of looking back at what our storm reaction is and where we've got some hot spots and people's obvious, they've all got an opinion on what the county did wrong. But, you know, some of them might be founded. We might, you know, we want to take a listen to what they said, go out and view these spots, and one at a time just eliminate. You know, fix it and move on instead of putting it off and saying, nah, that's not mine, just fix it and move on. And another thing, I think we're, the irrigation district a lot of times wants to get involved and help with, they've got all the equipment and everything, but I don't know if we ever call on them to see if they'd climb alongside, you know, and help offset some of the costs. So, hard to say. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
I don't know if we need a formal proposal from either one of them, but let me talk to Rob. I want to talk to Rob and see,
bring
what,
it
his,
back to us.
See what his thoughts are on half a dozen different issues that I'm getting phone calls on. Okay?
Okay. So, do we have any general discussion this week? Okay, so we have one Thursday at 2, but I don't know. I somehow have been triple booked.
Thursday's a rough day for me. It's not rough, it's full.
What does minute corrections mean, Terry, on the agenda?
Wendy will explain it to you.
Okay.
Touch base with Wendy.
Is it an actual meeting?
No, it's just a reminder.
Okay. And then, interesting. Okay. Well, Thursday might get cleared up. I have firearm qualifications I have to do that day. But somehow I have a 11 o'clock, a 12 to 1:30, a 1 o'clock, and a 2 o'clock.
Well, let's go over it after the meeting, Lily.
Okay.
And we'll figure it out.
No worries.
Because I don't see where you're triple booked, so.
Okay. So I will call our meeting to close at 10:46.